And for future generations, a new world order, a world where the rule of law, not the law of the jungle,
in the councils of government,
the conduct.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
Here the Allies stood and fought against tyranny in a giant undertaking unparalleled in human history. At dawn, on the morning of the 6th of June, 1944, 225 Rangers jumped off the British landing craft and ran to the bottom of these cliffs. Their mission was one of the most difficult and daring of the invasion: to climb these sheer and desolate cliffs and take out the enemy guns. And the American Rangers began to climb. When one Ranger fell, another would take his place. They knew what awaited them there. They would not be deterred. 225 came here. After 2 days of fighting, only 90 could still bear arms. Behind me is a memorial that symbolizes the Ranger daggers that were thrust into the top of these cliffs. And before me are the men who put them there. These are the boys of Puente Hope. These are the men who took the cliffs. These are the champions who helped free a continent. These are the heroes who helped end a war. 40 summers have passed since the battle that you fought here. You were young the day you took these cliffs. Some of you were hardly more than boys with the deepest joys of life before you. Yet you risked everything here. Why? Why did you do it? We look at you and somehow we know the answer. It was faith and belief. It was loyalty and love. It was the deep knowledge, and pray God we have not lost it, that there is a profound moral difference between the use of force for liberation and the use of force for conquest. Something else helped the men of D-Day. The rock-hard belief that Providence would have a great hand in the events that would unfold here. That God was an ally in this great cause. These are the things that impel them. These are the things that shape the
You're having a good Memorial Day with your family. Memorial Day is a day that we celebrate, but it's not really a celebration so much of war as it's a remembrance, a Memorial Day for those who have died in war. America has never really glorified war. We've gone to war reluctantly, and we have been reluctant warriors, and when we had to go to war, we went to war. One of the things about the 20th century that changed, though, is that we quit declaring war the way the Constitution intended. The Constitution intended it to be difficult to go to war. It intended that the country would be unified and go to war only with reluctance, only when we had to, that we would fight under the American flag, not the United Nations emblem or the United Nations symbols, but for America. We've kind of gone down a slippery slope away from that, where we now go to war willy-nilly without a unified nation. I'm reminded of Pat Buchanan's book when he wrote about World War II and World War I recently, and he talked about the way in World War I, when the discussions were going on, that friends came up to Churchill, and Churchill was gleeful and ecstatic about the prospects of war. World War I turned out to be one of the most horrendous cases of carnage. Millions of soldiers would die in one battle. And Churchill looked upon this as glee, basically gleefully rubbing his hands together at the prospect of war. The Prime Minister at the time was H.H. Asquith, and when he's described in Pat Buchanan's book, he is described as looking ashen and looking struck, and in conversations with Bosun's families and friends, that he was deeply troubled by the prospect of war. Now, we do on occasion have to go to war, but that's the kind of leadership you want, someone who's deeply troubled by war and would only go to war as a last resort. I tell people in my speeches that if I'm ever elected to office, the most important vote I will ever cross my desk or that I will ever have to participate in is a declaration of war. I will fight to my utmost to make sure that we always do it in a constitutional way and that there is up or down vote on declaration of war. And I will treat it as if I'm sending my kids to war. I will not treat it lightly. We don't go to war for reasons that are not of great importance. And mostly, really, the reason to go to war is to defend our country from attack. I don't think we reshape the world in our image. That was sort of Woodrow Wilson's idea, that we are going to make the world safe for democracy. Well, that even ignores the question that we're not a democracy. We're supposed to be a constitutional republic. So if we don't even understand the difference between democracy and a constitutional republic, do we really think it's our obligation to be instructing the rest of the world on what freedom is? I think we lead by example. We're the shining light, and we should lead by that example. I hope on this Memorial Day you'll think about the soldiers who did give their life for the shining example of American freedom, and that we work our very best together to try to not have...
Dulce et decorum est pro patria mori. It is right and proper to die for one's country. Not for this government, for your country, for the land and the people whom you love. We care not whence they came, dear in their lifeless clay, whether unknown or known to fame, their cause and country still the same. They died and wore the gray. They sleep well in their unknown graves on this faraway battlefield. They gave their lives in defense of their country on the fields of the first and second Manassas. But for them, the counting of time is not, for they dwell in the city of God. That's from Groveton Cemetery, nearby here in Manassas Battlefield. And, shortly after the War for Southern Independence, a group of ladies got together and put together the first Decoration Day. They decorated the graves of those who fought gallantly and valiantly for their homes, including the unappreciated Union soldiers in Southern graves. They decorated everybody because everybody fought bravely for their country. Right or wrong, politics, besides the point. It is always the poor and middle class who die in the wars that the elites foist upon us. Keep that in mind. Now, Chris and I are not anti-war. We're anti-bullshit. War is unfortunately sometimes necessary, but it has to be just for a right cause. And soldiers for that which is behind them, not to conquer that which is in front of them. That means that the only good kind of war is a defensive war. So Decoration Day became Memorial Day, which we're observing tomorrow. The first large observance was actually held in Arlington National Cemetery with the Ulysses S. Grant there, which is kind of ironic or rude, because Arlington National Cemetery used to be Robert E. Lee's home, General Robert E. Lee. Just think about that for a minute. And it's interesting that we're celebrating Memorial Day. It's now turned into barbecues and ball games and, you know, buy more furniture and electronic components and gizmos and things that buzz and whatever. It's you know, it's a sales gimmick now. More crappy shit you don't need made by slaves in other countries with money you don't have. But the truth of the matter is that it is a day that we should all set aside to honor those who died in war. Most soldiers fight gallantly. Unfortunately, most of the time, they are political pawns of the bankers and those who finance all the wars. Now, Memorial Day wasn't a nationwide holiday until 1971, and some of us still refer to it as Decoration Day. But the first, widely recognized day for Memorial Day was done by General Logan, and his wife actually said that he emulated the practices of Confederate Decoration Day. She wrote that Logan said it was not too late for the Union men of the nation to follow the example of the people of the South in perpetuating the memory of their friends who had died for the cause they thought just and right. The thing about it is that it's always about supporting the troops. Well, you support the troops by not sending them to stupid wars. You support the troops, and we do have a legitimate Marine and Navy. Now, we're not supposed to have an army. We're supposed to have a militia. And the Congress may call up the militia if they declare a war, and then they will be under the command of the president. That's not the system that we have. But the thing to keep in mind is you can't be rah-rah-rah war or anti-war. Like you can't be pro or anti-government. Which government? Which war? For what purpose? What's the context? That's what you really have to think about. The context of the wars that we have now is not defensive. It's not in America's interest. And you have, on average, between 3 and 20 military people committing suicide in this country every single day because they're used in a way that is not what they were sold through patriotism, love of country, defense, doing the gallant thing. That's what we need to get back to, and you need to realize that if you truly support the troops, if you truly love your country, you won't let them not only spy on you, you won't let them indefinitely detain people, you won't let them keep bypassing the Constitution with these emergency powers and all this other crap, but you'll teach people the truth, and you'll reclaim your heritage. And we got a clip here from a vet talking mostly to his two kids who are also in the military. It's a five-minute clip. We'll be back to close on the other side of this, but it's important to remember these things on this Decoration or Memorial Day.
But when you talk about a new structure, I'm not sure you've used the term new world order. I mean, what is it? Is it simply a world order that's defined by new interest and new mutuality of interest?
Well, that's certainly how you have to start.
Oceania was at war with East Asia. Oceania had always been at war with East Asia.
It's a tough war we're in. It's not going to be over right away. There's going to be other wars. I'm sorry to tell you, there's going to be other wars. We will never surrender, but there will be other wars. And right now, we're going to have a lot of PTSD to treat, my friends. We're going to have a lot of combat wounds that have to do with these terrible explosions.
Again, the guiding principle of empire, one that Kissinger and his kind accept as naturally as breathing, is that independence cannot be allowed. In fact, Kissinger has such contempt for the average lowly serf that he was even quoted as once saying in Woodward and Bernstein's book, The Final Days, as calling military men sent to fight in all the wars he plotted in the comfort of his own throne, quote, dumb, stupid animals to be used as pawns for foreign policy.
Everything comes in handy for the Pentagon.
There's a joke in the military that the best recruiter is an economic downturn.
And that recruiter is raging on.
What happened after 2008 that solved their problem was the desperation of millions of Americans. We had an economic crisis. We've had unemployment zoom up.
No matter the times, the power of the Pentagon seems eternal.
American leaders do not become presidents by challenging the national security, the national security state, nor the military-industrial complex. They just don't do it.
meaning luring in more young Americans into more wars with no happy end.
I say this to my own kids, and I've got one in the Army, and I got another thinking about it. I mean, I know it's a tough economic choice to make these days. I know the jobs suck. I know school is too expensive for a lot of people. You know, I know they make it attractive, but you just you have to continue to remember what it is that they're doing. And that organization does not exist to give you money for school. That organization exists to assert the political will of the United States government against other people by force of arms. And what they do is not like it's portrayed in the movies. They're not sending you out there to be a hero. They're sending you out there to be a bully. You know, they're not sending you out there to be a hero. That's not what it's really about. It's never been about that. It's never been about that. You know, the fact that some people fight back and put you in danger is also part of the equation. But, you know, it's not... the Iraqis never presented any threat to this country. And if we leave, those Iraqis don't present any threat to this country after we leave. Why put yourself in a position to go over there and be forced by a circumstance not of your choosing to take the life of another human being who's a total stranger? If they're not, you know, they're not some evil caricature like you've seen in the films and all that stuff. They're people. They have mothers. They have fathers. They have sisters. They have brothers. They have children. You know, there's people that love them just like there's people that love you. You know, and those people grieve when they lose them, just like people grieve if they lose you, you know. That's maybe not as dramatic and as exciting, you know, and clear cut, you know, and easy to understand as, you know, the sort of simple binary world of good and evil that you get painted for you, but that's not the way the real world is. You know. And in the real world, again, you have to live with the consequences of your decisions the rest of your life. Think hard. So I served in 8 conflict areas, and you know, I raised my right hand 8 times, or no, I raised my hand 5 times during the course of 1 career, and took an oath, and that oath was to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States from all enemies, foreign and domestic. You know, I went to 8 conflict areas. I never met a single person who was an enemy of the United States Constitution. Not one. And no enemies of the Constitution. I did spend a lot of time going out there again and becoming a political instrument, you know, for transnational corporations and to preserve American, you know, military and political supremacy around the world. But that's not in the oath. That's not in the oath. There were nobody threatening the Constitution in Vietnam. There was nobody threatening the Constitution in Grenada, Guatemala, El Salvador, Colombia, Peru, Somalia, Haiti. I went to all those places. I never met anybody that was a threat to the Constitution or the principles of the Constitution, for that matter. You know, I just met people. I just met people, and they put me in circumstances where I had to do a lot of things that I wish I didn't have in my head.
You know, that guy at the end, that's a hardcore special forces guy. You hear that? 8 combat zones in his career. He knows what he's talking about. I have a lot of my whole family's been military far back as before the founding of this country. You know, one of the things, and you made that statement, you know, we're not anti-war. I'm not anti-war. I have massive military friends, military family. I live where I live, and my subdivision is surrounded by military. I get along with everybody, you know, because the core of the people who serve in the military are special. But the problem is the politicians and who controls them. That's the problem. And anybody, and you talked about 3 to 20 guys a day still killing themselves. Nobody even talks about it in the news. Where's Fox News? You know, that's supposed to be the, you know, red, white, and blue, blood, red-blooded channel, you know, for conservatives and God and country. Bullshit. You know, this should be running all the time. And it's not. You know, I remember you know, during the Iraq war, that debacle. It was terrible. But I remember 24/7 leftist media exposing the disaster of it constantly. And Bush and his administration and Cheney, you know, trying to spin it and defend it, and Fox trying to spin it and defend it. And it was a mess. And they're still telling the same lies today. I have a lot of friends that were over there. And it's bullshit. Surge never worked. It only worked for a while. You know, as soon as you turned your back and went down the other aisle, they filled the alley you were leaving. You know, they were sending billions of dollars of hard cash into communities to, like, you know, work up rebel leaders and community leaders to create militias. It was the biggest biggest scam in the history of this country. It never worked. You know, and the whole forces of service agreement crap that, you know, Fox is trying to play, that's why we have ISIS. Bull crap. We have ISIS because we wanted ISIS, you know, because we needed Assad to go. Now it's out of control, you know, and it's just like, you know, what was Libya? Libya was out about arms to bad guys who became ISIS to take Assad out. See, here's the problem. Is if you understand the truth, and like you said, I'm not anti-war, I'm anti-bullshit, you know. We fought a few legitimate wars, a couple, you know, and that's great. If you have a legitimate reason. Our founding fathers said a long time, I mean, they come from the British Empire, people. They knew what an empire was. They knew what constant war and action and force was all about. They were Britons. You know, they were English subjects before they had the revolution. And they sat down and said, if we're going to have peace and prosperity, here are the rules that we must live by. Well, we've pissed all that to the wind. We are literally, we don't make anything, but we're always at war. Think about that. We don't make anything, but we're always taxed to death. We don't make anything, but our borders wide open. We don't make anything, but our inner cities are war zones, and we're busy all over the world. I love what Rand said. You know, quit building bridges in other countries and build a couple here. I mean, it's sometimes those simple statements are so powerful, you know. And the thing is that we used to have this conversation. Don't, for some of you guys, I grew up in Vietnam era. Don't you remember the protests and the conversations and the media? And that was the first time we got media in a war zone. And it changed the way Americans look. Well, the powers that be and the marketing people got up and said, well, hell, okay, so they're exposing us, so how can we spin it? And in a generation, they'll forget all this shit. That's exactly what's happened. Vietnam was a disaster, and it killed a lot of our young people. It tore our country apart. It ruined us economically. I mean, that's why we got off the gold standard. My God, that's every problem we have today comes from the Federal Reserve and then Nixon taking us off the gold standard. You know, the World War I and Vietnam War. War. You know, and we're going to do it again because the Republicans, I mean, they act like they never screwed up when they were in power for 6 years. It was a disaster. It ruined our economy. It ruined our position in the world. Nobody trusts us anymore. You've got the BRICS nations forming. That was under Bush, people. Wake the hell up. You know, Obama's an extension of this. You know, he's bombed more countries than any president I can remember. You know, I mean, my God, wake up. And that's the conversation we need to have, but you're not going to have it. You know why? Because they need war, because our economy's failing. And it's sad that and a whole new generation is going to sign right up and go die for these bastards again. That's the sad part of it, because our economy's screwed. It's like that guy said, you know, oh, I'll go join the war and hopefully I don't die or lose a leg and I'll get college. What a freaking way to think about your future. That's some sick shit, Rex. I'm done.
It's beyond sick. It's disgusting. And look, the simple fact is that gallant service in defense of your country, the people you love, your family, your friends, the principles and ideals of your country, that is awesome, and we are all called to that in one capacity or another, which is why we're supposed to be in the militia. But you heard what Henry Kissinger said, and they all think like that. To them, the military men and women are just tools to use in their giant global game of risk, imperial dominance. It's disgusting. And don't send your kids to the slaughter, especially all you out there claiming to be Christian and conservative. You don't fight these wars to slaughter other people on behalf of corporate transnational interests. You defend this land. You defend our people. And if nobody messes with us, we don't have to mess with anybody. That's the principles that we should be employing. But we're not, and we're conditioned not to. We're conditioned to have our empire of debt enforced by war on behalf of foreign countries and transnational bankers, and your sons or daughters are the ones who are suffering for it in more ways than one. It's time to put a stop to it. So on this Decoration Day, on this Memorial Day, learn something about what is going on. Tell someone something about what is going on. Don't put your future progeny at risk in order to ensure that this empire lasts. We're supposed to be a free people, not corporate cogs. That's not worth dying for. Liberty is. Today also happens to be, on the Latin calendar, Pentecost. And I'm going to read a little bit of scripture because if you're a Christian, it's important, and if you're not, pay attention anyway, because we are remembering those who have died in war. And even though most of our wars have been for bullshit, some of them were actually for liberty. And those people who shed their blood for you gave you the liberty that we've squandered. They deserve to be honored. This is from Acts chapter 2. And when the days of Pentecost were accomplished, they were all together in one place, and suddenly there came a sound from heaven as of a mighty wind coming, and it filled the whole house where they were sitting. And there appeared to them parted tongues as it were of fire, and it sat upon every one of them. And they were all filled with the Holy Ghost, and they began to speak with diverse tongues, according as the Holy Ghost gave them to speak. Now there were dwelling at Jerusalem Jews, devout men, out of every nation under heaven. And when this noise was abroad, the multitude came together and were confounded in mind, because that every man heard them speak in his own tongue. And they were all amazed and wondered, saying, Behold, are not all these that speak Galileans? And how have we heard every man our own tongue wherein we were born? Parthians and Medes and Elamites and inhabitants of Mesopotamia, Judea, Cappadocia, Pontus, and Asia, Phrygia and Pamphylia, Egypt, and the parts of Libya about Cyrenes and strangers of Rome. Jews also, and proselytes, Cretes, and Arabians, we have heard them speak in our own tongues the wonderful works of God. Human dignity. That's an important thing. You fight wars to defend human dignity, to defend liberty and honor. You do not go slaughter people because they're different. And are Muslim jihadis trying to kill you? I doubt it. Will they if they get a chance? Yes. Are they here all over the country like Lindsey Graham says? No. Might they come? Sure. But that's because you're poking around in their backyard. And I'm not saying that Muslims want to kill you because you're poking around in their backyards, but that certainly is a catalyst. Muslims have been trying to kill everybody else for 14 centuries. This is not something new. But we don't have to go over there in order to poke around with them. And if you're going to go defend anybody, how about the Christian population that's being decimated by the psychotic jihadis that your government has financed and funded and trained? Because you have abdicated your responsibility for liberty. You gave up the power of the militia, you gave up the power of the sword, the power of the purse, and now you're a controlled interest. You're psychologically manipulated. And until you transcend that, you cannot be free. And until you can have the mindset of freedom, you can't teach others. And if there aren't 75 to 80 million of us who want to be free, your sons and daughters are going to die in unnecessary wars on behalf of foreign governments and transnational corporations. And your liberty is going to die and remain dead. And the liberty you have left is merely the sap and the branches. The root has been chopped. You need to replant it. From John chapter 20. On the evening of that day, the first day of the week, the doors being shut where the disciples were for fear of the Jews, Jesus came and stood among them and said to them, "Peace be with you." When he had said this, he showed them his hands and his side. Then the disciples were glad when they saw the Lord. Jesus said to them again, "Peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, even so I send you." Peace is not merely the absence of war. Peace is a reconciliation of the fearful psychological lack that you have in your unconscious and in your heart, filled by the transcendent purpose of your life. The only purpose of liberty is life. War takes life. The only legitimate war is the war that defends life. And we are always at war. Don't be a wuss. Don't be a pacifist. Don't be a warmonger. In peace, prepare for war. You will always have to be ready to use force to defend the innocent and your homeland when necessary. But we don't have to engage in wars for profit. On this Decoration Day, on this Memorial Day, on this day of Pentecost, get in touch with the truth. If you pray, pray. If you don't pray, learn how. And think of this. Prayer is not merely quiet contemplation. Prayer inspires action. You are responsible for what you do in this life. Are you going to spread hatred and death? Or are you going to fight and be willing to lay down your life in order to defend liberty and the truth and the beautiful and the good? They're spying on you because they want to create psychological profiles to keep you in darkness. Resist it. Fight it. Transcend it. This is Rex and Trog signing off.
The thunder of liberty rumbles on.
You win!
American leadership, including our military power, is stopping ISIL's advance. Instead of getting dragged into another ground war in the Middle East, we are leading a broad coalition, including Arab nations, to degrade and ultimately destroy this terrorist group. We're also supporting a moderate opposition in Syria that can help us in this effort, and assisting people everywhere who stand up to the bankrupt ideology of violent extremism. Now, this effort will take time. It will require focus. But we will succeed. And tonight, I call on this Congress to show the world that we are united in this mission by passing a resolution to authorize the use of force against ISIL. We need that authority.
From this day forward, any nation that continues to harbor or support terrorism will be regarded by the United States as a hostile regime. Our nation has been put on notice. We're not immune from attack. We will take defensive measures against terrorism to protect Americans. Today, dozens of federal departments and agencies, as well as state and local governments, have responsibilities affecting homeland security. These efforts must be coordinated at the highest level. So tonight I announce the creation of a cabinet-level position reporting directly to me, the Office of Homeland Security. These acts of violence against innocents violate the fundamental tenets of the Islamic faith. And it's important for my fellow Americans to understand that. The enemy of America is not our many Muslim friends. It is not our many Arab friends.
America's understand we fight not a religion. Ours is not a campaign against the Muslim faith.
Our war is against evil, not against Islam. There are thousands of Muslims who proudly call themselves Americans.
The future must not belong to those who slander the prophet of Islam.
Mr. President, this is your moment. We're ready to be led.
Now, during my years here when I voted, I had the eighth most conservative voting record in the Congress. And it does pain me to be described as spineless or a squish. And I tell you what pains me the most is when they describe me as the establishment.
I think the message from the American people is they'd like to see a right-of-center, responsible, conservative, governing majority. That's what the Speaker and I tend to provide, and hopefully we'll have enough followers to do that. And that's good, because when the American people elect divided government, they're not saying they don't want anything done. What they are saying is they want things done in the political center, things that both sides can agree on. We talked about the things
where there may be some agreement. It means, as far as the Tea Party and others are concerned, it's anybody to the left of Ted Cruz is a rhino, a Republican in name only, which, as I say, is an insult. But you know what? The real rhinos are the people in the Tea Party and on the hard right, because they have made it clear over and over again that their allegiance is not to the Republican Party, but to their particular brand of conservative.
We're now seeing pictures of Abrams tanks and Humvees with ISIS fighters in them.
Why is that?
Why is that? Because Iraqi soldiers have laid down their arms, because the Syrian rebels that we armed, who are supposed to help us, are the same people who've turned around and decided they want Iraq as well.
And that ties right back into not having an appropriate status of forces agreement to secure the region.
Hold on. We have pictures of United States senators with terrorists that we won't run here, but it'll run on other magazines, it'll run in other areas, but we won't run it on this show. He's standing with terrorists. Listen, all I'm saying is we don't know who our friends are. We don't know who we're arming. We don't know who we're giving money to. We don't know who we're training.
Do you know that we wouldn't even give intelligence information or weapons to Ukraine? Give them the weapons they need. Give them the wherewithal they need. Give them the ability to fight. They will fight.
Bomb Iran, you know. Bomb, bomb, bomb. Anyway.
We have to have a strategy, and that strategy is regime change. And anything short of that path, I think, would be harmful.
The situation in Nicaragua will not improve economically for the people if we cut off aid to the Contras. In fact, it'll probably worsen. The only way that the economic conditions of the people in Nicaragua will improve is if the kind of government that's representative of the people is installed.
As we have in the past, we can help facilitate weapons to get to the hands of the Libyan military, those who are fighting against Gaddafi. I think we could facilitate, as we did in the Afghan conflict against the Russians.
I would be launching airstrikes, not only in Iraq.
Paul said about it this morning. He said it's a mistake to arm them. Most of the arms that we've given the so-called moderate rebels have wound up in the hands of ISIS, because ISIS simply takes it from them, or it is given to them, and we mistakenly actually end up giving it to some radicals. Look, things
has
are
Rand
very...
Paul, has Rand Paul ever been to Syria? Has he ever met with ISIS? Has he
I'm
ever
not
met
trying
with,
to cause a
with
fight,
any of these
sir.
People? No. We're going to have a fight, because it's patently false. This is the same Rand Paul that said we didn't want to have anything to do with anything to do in the Middle East, by the way. I don't want to get in a fight with him at all.
Yeah.
But it's not true. I know these people. I'm in contact with them all the time.
All right, let me ask you that.
Well, he just doesn't understand. He has displayed this kind of naivete since he came to the Senate. He wanted to cut all our defense spending, wanted to cut our support for the state of Israel. He's sort of changing now as he's seeing ISIS succeed and the foreign policy. He's more aligned with Barack Obama's national security policy than certainly any Republican.
We came, we saw, he died.
He didn't have anything to do with your visit.
don't share.
Yeah.
He said that we shouldn't have any troops in Iraq. He agreed with Obama. That was a disaster. When there was a chance to do something constructive about Syria with a no-fly zone, he said we don't need one. Generally speaking, he's been more wrong than right. He has a isolationist view of the world that I don't share. And I like him, but he's his father's...
Senator from Arizona, urge this body to trust the Republicans. Let me be clear, I don't trust the Republicans. And I don't trust the Democrats. And I think a whole lot of Americans, likewise, don't trust the Republicans and the Democrats because it is leadership in both parties that has gotten...
This is sort of this neocon community... And the neoconservatives have really never met a war they didn't like. And so what you'll see is that these attacks saying, oh, you're close to Obama's position, in reality, the neocons have been with President Obama on the war in Libya. They've been with President Obama on wanting to bomb Assad. And they were really also for taking out Hussein. Everything that they've been for over the last decade has really been to make America less safe and to make the region more chaotic. So I think we could have a good intellectual debate about this, but attack ads like this that are mostly untrue, if not entirely false, probably don't serve the public very well.
You want to name names when you're criticizing or blasting these so-called neocons?
Well, you know, if these people would release their jokers, then we'd know who they are. But these are people who want to be in the shadows and have something secret and then put up a bunch of lies. But I think there are people that you'll see in the Senate who basically favored giving arms to Gaddafi, and then the next year they were favoring giving arms to the so-called freedom fighters. But now it turns out that the war they had in Libya, which supported by the neocons and President Obama, the war's a disaster. Radical jihad has run amok in Libya. It's chaotic, and I think we're more likely to be attacked by people organizing in Libya than we were before the war. So people need to think through when war is in our interest and when war is not in our interest.
We need a national defense robust enough to defend against all attack, moderate enough to deter all enemies, and nimble enough to defend our vital interests. But we also need a foreign policy that protects American interests and encourages stability, not chaos. I have a message. A message that is loud and clear and does not mince words. We've come to take our country back. We've come to take our country back from the special interests that use Washington as their personal piggy bank. The special interests that are more concerned with their personal welfare than the general welfare. The Washington machine that gobbles up our freedoms and invades every nook and cranny of our lives must be stopped. Less than 5 years ago, I stood just down the road in my hometown in Bowling Green and said those same words. I wasn't supposed to win. No one thought I would. Some people ask me, then why are you running? The answer is the same now as it was then. I have a vision for America. I want to be part of a return to prosperity, a true economic boom that lifts all Americans, a return to a government restrained by the Constitution. A return to privacy, opportunity, liberty. Too often, when Republicans have won, we've squandered our victory by becoming part of the Washington machine. That's not who I am.